This is Report to Wyoming.
My guest today is Matthew Miller. He is a firearms dealer in Florida. He reached out to K2 Radio News after one of our articles caught his attention, which you'll be hearing about momentarily. But today's topic is gun safety.
We have a company called CashForArms.com, and then we have another brand that's FirearmLand.com. So they're both operated out of the same facility. Essentially, Cash for Arms is a brand we use to buy guns from people all over the country. So we're one of the nation's largest used gun dealers. So we buy guns from people from all 50 states, and then we bring them in and get them prepared for resale, and then resell them through the Firearm Land brand.
Okay, gotcha. And you have a unique perspective on the policies surrounding gun laws and gun safety, correct?
I think so. It's a complicated topic, but and certainly for those of us in the firearms industry, we're like most, very pro Second Amendment, pro gun rights. That's sort of the basis of our position on most things. It gets a little bit more nuanced and complicated, especially with respect to stories like the one, you wrote about the man in Colorado, who was sentenced to 3 years for carrying, being a felon in possession of a firearm. That's a topic where, there's a lot of politicization of firearms, obviously, in this country, and I think, the sort of gun control lobby, the folks who want more legislation, more rules around, controlling access to firearms, tend to use stories like this to push a legislative agenda, when, in fact, we already have a lot of rules and laws, as evidenced by the fact this gentleman got 3 years in federal prison to control this type of activity. But it's really the source of those guns and, where people like this can acquire firearms that I think creates a little bit more tension within the firearms community.
And I do want to acknowledge that there are many people who don't believe Americans should be able to buy and sell guns. The counterargument, and frankly the reality, is that people will always probably be able to acquire guns. They'll be able to go through different channels, maybe not legal channels, to get them.
Yeah, absolutely. With respect to access to guns and sort of the legality of guns, of course, our right to bear arms is codified in the Second Amendment. It's been reaffirmed by the Supreme Court, most recently in the landmark Heller decision, which really, I think, solidified not only the right to keep and bear arms, as stated in the Constitution, but the right for people to own, to possess, a lot of different types of guns that the gun control lobby would like to prevent people from having. Ultimately, you can't get rid of, there's no magic wand solution, where even if we all agreed, the world would be a better place if we didn't have guns. If we all agreed, the world would be a better place if we didn't have human violence, right?
Right,
There's no way to make that happen. And the fact is, we have in this country, by most estimations, more firearms than human beings, hundreds of millions of guns. And by way of our right, there is no national registry of firearms. So the government doesn't know, where guns are, who has which guns. And so the idea that, we can just sort of create rules to make guns go away seems to be folly. It's just not realistic. And ultimately, people, we in this country, of course, the founding of our country was based on the fact that we, as Americans, get our rights from God, not from the government. And that's a fundamental tenet of being an American, that the government doesn't give us our rights, our fundamental rights. And, one of those fundamental rights in our Constitution is the right to protect ourselves. And so as long as there is human violence and people who want to do harm to others, those people will find tools to perpetrate that violence, whether it be a gun or a knife, or we've seen vehicle attacks. You know, but we don't hear a lot of outcry over the prohibition on trucks, you know, or the prohibition on knives. You know, people walk around in Europe and they machete each other, you know, because they can't buy a gun.
Right.
So people will find access to weapons. The question then is, do we have the right to defend ourselves against those people?
Yes, and to your point, we've had 4 homicides in Casper this year, which is extremely high for our small city. And 2 of those homicides did not involve guns. In fact, 1 was a stolen kitchen knife, and the other was strangulation. But I'd like to ask you, how do you navigate different state laws for customers who are out of state that want to buy a gun from you?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the landscape has become and is becoming more and more complicated, not even just at a state level, but in many states, you know, county level and city level laws restrict the types of weapons people can buy, the types of magazines they can carry. And so, yeah, it's gotten pretty complicated. It's an area of focus for our company, so we actually have an active campaign where we manage and monitor, you know, legislative activity all over the country. So we keep abreast of, and that's kind of how we came across you, sort of keeping abreast of what's happening out there in the firearms world. But, you know, areas like most recently in Tennessee, the state legislature passed a law which will enable staff at public schools to carry firearms, to be armed on campus. You know, that's a new initiative, obviously. That's more of a pro-gun initiative, but there are a lot of others where state by state, it's part of the strategy of the gun control lobby to kind of copy and paste state laws. They know at a federal level it's very difficult to get the kind of legislative action they want to happen with a divided Congress and, you know, not having full control and being able to make rules. So they go state by state and kind of copy and paste restrictive laws that have already passed judicial review. And so, for example, things like the, quote, assault weapons bans that are popular in a lot of more, you know, Democrat-run states like California and New York and Illinois, they will take those laws as a template and then use their forces in other states where they have control of the state legislature. So it's an ever-evolving landscape that we have to stay on top of, and then, you know, keep track of it. And really, not only for ourselves, but we do a lot of education. We provide tools and educational resources to consumers and other FFLs around the country, you know, to help them understand what they can and can't do.
And would this be something like where a customer brings in a driver's license, or how would you know where people are living?
Yeah. So the good news with our business is all online. And so for your listeners, anybody who's not familiar with buying a firearm anywhere in the country, if you want to buy a gun and it's legal to own in your state, you do have to go, if you're going to buy a gun from a gun dealer, you do have to go to the gun dealer and fill out an ATF form, and then that precipitates the federal FBI background check. So it really is the responsibility of the gun dealer who hands you the gun to walk out the store with. It's their responsibility to determine whether or not you are legally able to possess a gun. And the primary way that's done, again, is through the ATF form 4473. That's the form you go and fill out, and there is a series of questions on that form related to your criminal history, mental health history, military history, for example, like a dishonorable discharge, drug addiction or drug abuse history, and citizenship. So there's a whole series of questions there, and if you you know, if you answer incorrectly, obviously you have to be truthful. That's what we're seeing with the Hunter Biden case now, his gun case where he falsified the 4473. So, you know, under penalty of perjury, you have to answer the questionnaire truthfully. But if you answer incorrectly and you have a history that prevents you from being legally able to possess a gun, then it's up to the FFL to deny the transfer. And then, of course, the secondary step is the background check. And the FFL just has to take whatever the FBI says. If they say you're approved or you're denied on the background check, they have to follow that. It's also, I don't know, are you familiar with the straw purchase? Have you heard about the straw purchase issue for firearms dealers?
No, I have not.
Okay, so that's a really important topic, and it's actually a hot topic with ATF. There have been across the country, even here in Jacksonville, 6 or 8 years ago, there were a handful of gun dealers who were convicted of crimes and went to prison for conducting what the ATF considers to be straw purchases. So a straw purchase is when someone comes in and represents to you that they want to buy a gun, and they're actually buying the gun for someone else who's not legally able to buy one themselves. The most common kind of example is, you know, I don't want to stereotype, but usually the most common is the girlfriend who comes into the store. And kind of the stereotypical example is the girlfriend who's on the phone and looking at the guns in the counter and on the phone saying, well, do you want the one with the 45 or do you want the 9mm? So that's not being very discreet. And any gun dealer who hears a conversation like that immediately has to stop and not conduct that transaction. It's a question on the ATF form. Are you the one who is, are you buying this gun for your own use, for your own ownership and use? And so you have to say yes to that. You can't buy a gun for someone else. If you say yes and you're lying, you could be convicted of federal crime and go to prison. But the gun dealer, him or herself, can actually be found criminally liable if they don't take reasonable caution to prevent a straw purchase from taking place. So in the cases in the past, they've had undercover operations where ATF agents went in and conducted, you know, fake straw purchases where they kind of gave hints or inklings to the gun dealer that they weren't actually the one, that they might be buying it for someone else. There could be, you know, surveillance video within the store that contains audio where, you know, later on in an investigation, it's determined that the gun dealer should have known that this was potentially a straw purchase. There could also be eyewitnesses in the store. So that's a big deal. Gun dealers have to be very careful these days in terms of making sure to the best of their ability, and again, with this kind of reasonable caution standard, that they are not transferring or you know, giving a gun, sending someone out the door with a gun, that they might have a reasonable suspicion is not legally able to own one.
And in some states, it's not required to register a gun, but are all the purchases, mm-hmm. Is there always a long history of the purchase, or do you have to remain kind of keep their information anonymous? Let's say in a felon gets arrested for possessing a gun, but can then investigators look at information on the purchase of the gun to maybe implement if there was something like that going on? Of course, it could have been stolen. There are a lot mm-hmm. of scenarios, but.
Yeah. So what happens, there is no national registry for gun ownership, and that's been you know, stricken by the Supreme Court as unconstitutional. There are state registries, so some states like California require you to register a handgun, for example. Not all guns are required to be registered in those states, but handguns typically are. And so the state sort of has an idea of, you know, if people report the guns as they're supposed to, they know who has what. On a federal level, what ATF will do, if law enforcement gets involved in a situation like that where a gun is used in a crime and a gun is recovered, then they will use the serial number of the gun and the records that have been submitted to ATF by the firearms dealers. And so this only works if the gun was sold and transferred through a licensed dealer. They will go back to the last dealer who reported having that serial number firearm, and they'll do what they call a trace. So you'll get a call from an ATF agent, you know, hey, we're trying to do a trace on this gun. They'll have us look up in our records to determine where we bought the gun, who we sold the gun to, if we shipped the gun to a dealer, which, you know, in our case, if you are a licensed dealer, you have to send guns to another licensed dealer if you're shipping a gun. So either way, we have to be able to tell the ATF where the gun came from and where the gun went. And those records are kept, they're required for every firearms dealer to be kept permanently, you know, unless and until the business ends, and then we turn the records back into the ATF. So, but yeah, every licensed firearms dealer has to keep a record like that of every gun they receive and every gun they sell. And that's the only way that firearms like that can be tracked.
So you've probably got a little bit of data, and I don't know if you can share much about your sales, but do you have records of, like, which states you are selling to the most, things like that?
Yeah, you know, it's probably not surprising. The highest number of gun transactions, guns sold, typically happen in more pro-gun states and certainly states with larger populations. So Texas is usually kind of top of the list. You know, the gun culture in Texas is very strong, and it's a big state and a lot of people. Florida, we do a lot of transactions in Florida. And, you know, those are kind of the big ones. It's surprising, though. You may be surprised, even in a state like California. I mean, there are a lot of people in California, but it's much more restrictive as far as gun laws go. But we have a lot of business, a lot of people wanting to buy guns in California. And that has increased in what you might consider to be more of the, you know, gun-unfriendly states. That trend has increased really since the early days of the COVID pandemic.
I was going to ask about that. Okay.
Is that right? Yeah. So yeah. In the summer, especially with a lot of the, you know, the rioting that was going on during the summer and fall of 2020, we had many customers contacting us from, you know, very blue parts of the country and saying things like, you know, I never thought I would buy a gun, but I don't feel safe anymore, and I think I just need something here to protect myself. So, yeah, a lot of people, and we've seen that trend continue really up through today, where I think just the sort of overall level of, you know, sense of disorder and chaos in society and the amount of violence, that sort of random violence that appears to be, you know, prevalent is causing a lot of people who may have thought they never wanted to have a gun, you know, to come and buy a gun from us.
And it's a bit of a catch-22. Yes, it's great. They can exercise their Second Amendment rights. It's all good and well, but it's not a solution if you don't know how to use a gun or how to properly handle it, how to, you know, get a safe where you can lock it up, et cetera, right?
So true. You know, gun safety is the very first thing that we talk about, that we care about as a company. Our core values begin with safety, and it's, you know, safety first, safety last, safety always. There was a story, I think it was out of Kentucky, maybe a month or so ago, of a woman who shot and killed her teenage daughter accidentally through her purse while she was fishing around for her keys. She had in her purse a pistol that was in battery, meaning it was not only loaded, but she had, it was a semi-automatic pistol, she had a round in the chamber.
Oh my gosh.
The gun had no safety mechanism on it, and she had it unholstered. So she just had a loose gun in battery that literally requires just a few pounds of force on the trigger to fire. I mean, that's all you had to do. Just so, you know, she's fishing around in her purse for her keys and obviously caught the trigger on something, you know, in her purse, and fired the gun and killed her teenage daughter. I mean, just an unbelievable, tragic story. But, you know, while gun fatalities due to gun accidents are relatively uncommon, there are hundreds of people every year in the United States who die from gun accidents. And so gun safety is a huge concern, and not only teaching people how properly to handle a firearm. I mean, if you have a child, for example, who happens across a firearm, I would much rather have that child have already had some basic gun safety so they understand the dangers and risks of guns, they understand what not to do, than to have someone who's been kind of kept in the dark about guns, you know, guns are bad, let's not talk about guns, and then they come across one and they're fascinated by it and they start playing with it, you know?
Yeah.
So my belief is, and this is kind of, again, going back through American history a little bit to try to find some lessons of common sense things that can help with real solutions. We used to have across this country in public schools, especially in high schools, shooting sports, and, you know, gun programs, firearm programs were kind of part of, you know, what you might consider like a physical education program. And it wasn't very many years ago. In fact, I know some people who are a lot younger than I am who said, yeah, when I was in high school, you know, rural parts of the country, you know, kids would come to school in their truck with a shotgun in the window. It was just part of the kind of hunting and gun culture. And over the last, you know, couple of decades, I think we've seen this aversion to guns, this complete rejection of guns as being just taboo in our educational system. And, you know, there's so much emphasis on, you know, not talking about guns. I mean, you've seen the stories, right, of kids who get suspended from school because they were playing cowboys and Indians with a finger gun in, like, kindergarten. So there's so much taboo around guns. And meanwhile, 40% of the American population lives in a household with at least one firearm. So the idea that, you know, you're helping people by kind of ostrich, you know, head in the sand strategy to firearms, as opposed to embracing the opportunity to teach people about something that is a reality in our country. It is a reality in almost half the homes in our country. Seems to me to be kind of foolish and counterproductive. I would much rather see the educational system embrace firearms as a part of American life, whether you like them or not. Just agree with the basic truth that they're a fact of life, and that gun safety, therefore, is of paramount importance. And you can teach people, you know, at a young age about the risks and dangers of guns, about what to do if you come across a gun, you know, what not to do. and in that, you know, I think throughout that process, if schools had active engagement with their students on this topic, there's also an opportunity to help identify some of those students, that small percentage of students who are kind of heading down a dangerous path in terms of their relationship with firearms. Some of these, you know, school shooters that we end up finding out about usually too late. Some of those people might be able to be identified and have some intervention and help, you know, given to them early on if there was just a more proactive approach, you know, to firearms education.
We did have that topic come up where a bill was put forth for this year's Wyoming legislative session, but it was shot down, pun not intended. I do have a picture, too, of that kind of cultural divide, or how polarizing the gun topic is. I was in college at a large concert with two different friends, they were from totally different homes, backgrounds, and parts of America. And we walk in, and the National Guard is there, some members of the National Guard, and they were armed. I don't know what they had, big guns. And one friend said, "That really freaks me out." And the other friend said, "It makes me feel safer." I thought, yeah, that is so interesting.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And I think it's like so much in our society that it becomes propagandized and people tend to react emotionally to things that they've been kind of, you know, inculcated in over time based on, you know, kind of one, a message from one agenda or another, rather than kind of, you know, taking a more factual, objective approach. You know, as a firearms dealer, people who work with guns all day, every day, we all understand and trust that guns by themselves don't do anything. There's no such thing as a gun that just goes off. You know, it's not physically possible. And so I think, you know, understanding that releases a lot of the taboo and negative, you know, sort of pejorative nature of firearms themselves. And again, it kind of goes back to where we started the conversation with, unfortunately, some of the dark parts of the human heart, and using guns as a tool of violence as opposed to the guns themselves. So I think it really comes down to me, in your scenario, you know, you have to sort of look at the people with the guns. Do you trust the people? What are they there for? Are they going to use the guns to protect you or to attack you? And of course, in our society, not everybody agrees on that, right? We have people who are afraid of the police, and other people who, you know, welcome and support the police. So yeah, it's complicated.
So,
you know, it comes down to one of the things I did want to mention, too, just in terms of some of the nuance I mentioned at the start of the conversation about the industry and the story about this person who received the 3 years in prison, you know, shouldn't have had a gun. One of the difficult topics in our business is private party sales. And so, you know, this is an area where you have a lot of gun dealers and gun, you know, the gun community who vehemently disagree with each other over this topic. Some people believe that, you know, the people should be able to buy a gun from anyone they want, you know, and if you have a gun, you should be able to sell your gun. You shouldn't have to be a gun dealer to sell your gun. There's been a lot of discussion in recent years about gun shows and the gun show loophole, which is, you know, not really a loophole, not really a gun show problem. It's really a private party sale issue. So in the case of a convicted felon who's not legally able to buy a gun, in more than half of the states in the country, you can go onto websites like armslist.com is the sort of the most well-known and common, kind of like eBay for guns. And you can literally line up a purchase of a gun with some stranger where you meet in a parking lot, you know, and pass. It's like a, you know, a transaction, like you might have a drug deal or a gun transaction. It's kind of the same idea, you know. You bring the gun, I'll bring the cash, and you exchange the two. You have no idea if you're selling the gun. You have no idea at all whether or not this person is, you know, legal to own that gun. And so that's an area where I think there's a lot of work that could be done. You know, it's complicated, like I say, because I might want to sell my gun to my brother-in-law, and I know my brother-in-law is not a convicted felon. I know he's not a drug addict. You know, and so there are people who feel like that should be okay. At the same time, should it be okay for anyone to sell a gun to anyone, you know, in a parking lot for cash?
Yeah, that's a big responsibility. If you do make that decision, I'm not saying anyone should or shouldn't.
Yep.
I guess I would want to write down like a serial number. There'd be a lot of things to just try to make sure that that doesn't come back to bite.
And it can. I mean, as a seller of a gun, a private seller of a gun, if you sell a gun to someone and it ends up being used in a crime, you know, say it ends up being used to kill someone, you can be held not only criminally liable if you ignored, you know, some reasonable signs of suspicion, but you can also be held civilly liable. You know, the family of the person could come back and sue you as well. So there is a lot of responsibility, not only moral, but, you know, legal responsibility that goes with doing that. And that's really a big part of the reason why we started our business, to provide people nationwide with an opportunity to sell their guns.
Hear the full podcast at K2Radio.com. This is Colby Fedor.
in a fast and convenient and legal way where they can get more money for the guns than they typically get through other channels like local stores. Most local stores aren't able to pay as much as we can pay just because of the scale of our operation, our efficiencies. But they can rest assured when they sell the guns through a company like ours that all of those guns, when they're resold, 100% will go through a federal background check process. So we have a lot of customers who come to us and say, yeah, I've been kind of debating whether or not, you know, I'm not getting enough money. I went to a pawn shop. I went to a gun store. They're giving me pennies on the dollar. I know I could sell it for more private, but I'm just too nervous. I don't want to do it. And so it's definitely a contentious topic. Not we all don't agree on it.
One more question, and this opens a whole new can of worms. So I wish I'd asked it earlier. Sorry about that. But I'm thinking now about the mail. A lot of drugs are intercepted through the mail. It's such a crazy system. So how do you, I've never bought a gun through the mail. So how does that work?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it also has become more complicated in recent years. And it really comes down again to this sort of fundamental question of, are you going to follow the rules? You know, are you someone who follows the law or not? Because, you know, all the carriers, whether you want to ship a gun through FedEx or UPS or the Postal Service, they all require now that you have to have a federal firearms license in order to ship a gun. Now, there are some exceptions. I don't want to get too much in the weeds on it, but, like, you can ship a... For example, you could ship a shotgun through the Postal Service, and you don't have to be a firearms dealer. But for any handguns and any guns that are shipped through FedEx or UPS, they only allow federal firearms license holders or importers to make those shipments. And we actually have to have a specialized firearms agreement with UPS and FedEx. So they have specific terms and conditions that we have to abide by. There are specific shipping requirements, like you have to ship a gun with an adult signature required. You have to ship it with what they call direct delivery, which means no one can call and change the delivery address, you know, from the original one. So those requirements are in place, and the companies take them very seriously, and they will shut down accounts if people violate their rules. Again, it kind of gets back to, you know, if you're not going to follow the rules, you could certainly take a risk, roll the dice, and, you know, ship a gun and not tell anyone, and probably it's not going to be detected. So it's you know, definitely an area now. It's not something where anybody like a gun dealer or any legitimate business could do that at scale or a volume of sales where, you know, someone's going to say, I'm just going to set up shop and start selling guns over the internet and mail them to people directly. That would catch the attention of the ATF very quickly, and there would probably be some arrests. So, again, all the guns that a dealer sells, if we're going to ship the gun, there's a website called gunbroker.com, which is, again, it's kind of like eBay for guns, it's a gun auction platform, and you know, many people, millions of people use that website to buy guns from dealers all over the country and then get them shipped. But when they're shipped, they have to be shipped to a receiving FFL. So guns cannot be shipped directly to the private citizen who purchased the gun. It has to be shipped to the dealer. And then the citizen has to go to the dealer to do the background check and everything before they're allowed to pick up the gun.
This has been Report to Wyoming, presented in the public interest by Town Square Media.